Of course, we are breaking our marriage vows when we have a physically adulterous relationship. We also are breaking our marriage vows when we have an emotionally adulterous relationship.
Welcome again to Christianity at Work, the radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center in Eugene, Oregon. On the last two programs, Dr. Jack Crabtree and marriage and family therapist Christine Barber highlighted some of the warning signs that indicate a marriage is heading in the wrong direction. In this program, they continue the discussion by looking at how the marriage commitment, which should be our highest human loyalty, can be broken through emotional adultery and supposedly harmless flirtation. Let's listen to Jack and Christine.
So, Jack, here we are talking about marriage again. I think it's one of my favorite subjects, especially on the eve of my husband coming home, actually, this afternoon after being gone for, like, almost 2 weeks. It's a really long time. He was caught in those snowstorms in Colorado.
Well, that's probably the most precious gift God has given me, for sure, and it's worth thinking about and worth understanding.
I wish that some of the discussions we are having in these last few weeks and the discussions to come, I had the opportunity to hear 20 years ago when I got married.
Yeah.
I was pretty blind, were you?
I was totally ignorant. Didn't know anything.
I was pretty blind and you were totally ignorant. Well, we did learn a few things in 20 years.
Yeah.
Last week we talked a lot about how we break our marriage vows. But first we started talking about what it is that our marriage vow really does imply. So let me go back and talk about the 4 points that we started with last week. We covered 2, and we'll go back to 2 of them again today.
Okay.
The first one is that our marriage vow implies that we will strive to become connected to, that is, become one flesh with the other person. And some of the ways that we said that we break our vow in regard to that is we distance ourselves emotionally from the other person or physically from the other person. We seek ways to escape. Some of the typical ones are like drugs and alcohol, but there's many, many other ways that we can escape through hobbies, through other contributing to the community, just many, many ways that we're not really focusing on our marriage. Our primary focus, our primary loyalty becomes the other thing that's in our life, whatever that is. And our commitment was, I will be connected to you, not to something else, primarily. Okay, the second thing we said was our marriage vow implies that we will respect our marriage partner as another individual corresponding to me. And what we are getting at there is very many times in our marriages we try to get our spouse to in some way fix us, fix my loneliness, make me feel okay about myself, be my corsage so I look good in the community, or in some way I try and control that person. I can do it through intimidation, coercion. I can do it through very quiet means like compliance. But what I'm trying to do is change the other person rather than respect them as an individual. So those are the 2 things that we went through last week. The 2 or 3 things that we wanted to talk about today was the fact that our marriage vow implies that our partner needs to be our highest human loyalty. Another one is that our marriage vow implies that we will behave in a way that communicates that my spouse is special. And the third one is we need to have a great abundance of mercy and forgiveness in our marriages.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back to the one about our marriage vow implies our partner is the highest human loyalty.
Yeah, we've been looking at Genesis chapter 2 where it talks about, where I think you get the closest thing to a definition of marriage that the Bible has to offer. He says, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Those first 2 things we mentioned are sort of related to the two will become one flesh part of that definition. Now we're looking at the other one, leaving father and mother in order to cleave to one's wife. And I think that's exactly symmetrical. A woman leaves her father and mother to cleave to her husband. I think what's being communicated there is the idea that what had been your network of loyalties in your life, you are forsaking those in order to establish a whole new loyalty. a higher loyalty, a higher priority now in your life.
Now, you said network of priorities. You're not then just talking about leaving your mother and father, but leaving other priorities.
Other priorities as well. Yeah, I think probably at the time that that statement was penned, there was no other loyalty other than to your family and your parents in particular. But in our culture, that's sort of different. In fact, we oftentimes come to a marriage with other loyalties being higher loyalties than our loyalty to our parents. Oftentimes, friendships are more important to us than our family relationship in our society these days. And if Moses were writing that statement today, he might say, leave your friends and cleave to your wife and become one flesh.
Or might it also be correct to say that leave your emphasis on just about anything, like your work,
right,
your hobbies, anything, because your first priority, your first loyalty needs to be to your wife or
yeah,
your husband.
Yeah, I do think that we can have some occupation or some vocation or profession or inanimate thing can so be my commitment and my loyalty that it's going to compete with my loyalty for my spouse if I'm not prepared to forsake it. And absolutely, I think that's implicit in what he's saying there. I say human loyalty, the highest human loyalty, because obviously the Bible would accept God from that. You know, my highest loyalty certainly has to be to my Creator. But under God, you know, below my priority to God and my obedience to God, my spouse should be the highest loyalty in my life.
And it seems to me that the working out of my loyalty to God is in my marriage relationship.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we've talked about that a little bit in the past, but it's very, very convenient to sometimes use my so-called ministry or my service of God or my worship of God as a kind of cop-out, as a kind of cloak for what I'm really doing, and that is trying to escape this commitment that I've made to my spouse to become one with them or to treat them with the kind of specialness that I promised. So it is important to see, just as you said, that how do I obey God? How do I manifest my loyalty to God? Well, one huge important way is by keeping my vow to my spouse.
Jack, a few minutes ago you mentioned friendships. And what is the place of friendships alongside our marriage relationships?
Well, friendships, of course, can be really important just in human experience, in human existence, and can be an important support structure to my marriage. Oftentimes a friend, particularly a friend of the same sex, is going to understand more easily certain things that I'm going through. And particularly if I'm having difficulty in my marriage, they may understand the difficulty that I face and be able to support me in my efforts to keep my vow and be kind and compassionate and respectful of my wife or husband and so on.
And as a matter of fact, only having my husband would put undue stress only on my relationship with my husband. And I really see that happening a lot, that a husband or a wife will have only their relationship with their spouse, and it becomes overburdened. Let's speak a little bit more about that when we come back from this break.
Almost 20 years ago, the McKenzie Study Center in Eugene, Oregon, was created as a place where people could come and seriously think about their faith. Over the years, McKenzie has grown in different directions and gone through various changes, but one thing has remained constant: a passionate love of God's Word and the truth it contains. The McKenzie staff is dedicated to studying and understanding the Bible. Individually, they want to know what the biblical authors meant when they wrote the Bible. They want to peel away layers of false teaching and get to the very heart of the biblical message. And this is not easy. It's hard work. It requires years of dedication and the willingness to believe what the Bible actually says rather than what they might want it to say. These men and women also believe their studies and their teaching are not perfect. They know their understanding is limited, and they may be wrong, but they trust God to give them the eyes to clearly see His truth. They also encourage others to join them in their efforts, to ask them tough questions, to challenge their conclusions, and to take the Bible seriously. More importantly, they desire that all may come to the wonderful saving truth of the gospel. Much of the teaching done at McKenzie is available on tape and can be ordered from the tape catalog. Papers and the free monthly newsletter News and Views are also available. Information about how you can find out more about Mackenzie Study Center and its ministries will be given at the end of today's program. Now, let's return to Jack and Christine.
So, Jack, we were saying that friendships are very, very important in a marriage relationship to support the relationship. And it's also really important because sometimes the one partner or the other can become over-dependent on the relationship and need to have other relationships outside as a way to help augment some of their emotional needs and enjoyment needs, so that we're not just putting everything in the basket of the marriage. But there's also another side, and that's when we put too much emphasis on our friendships, leaving our spouse behind. Can you address that a little bit?
Yeah, it seems like there's two problems. One of them is related to what we talked about in our last session, that we can use our friendships as an escape, as a way of withdrawing. This marriage is too hard, it's too difficult, I'm just going to occupy myself with pursuing these friendships and distracting myself with these friendships and be busy enough that I can rationalize not working on my marriage. So they can be like a drug, like, or a distraction like anything else can. But they also pose another threat, and that is that my friendships can actually become a kind of adulterous relationship. And I don't mean literally, physically, sexually adulterous. I mean, although adultery certainly can result from that, literal adultery, but a kind of emotional adultery, where a friend becomes my soulmate. A friend becomes the person that I am loyal to above and beyond anyone else. And if all of a sudden I shift my loyalties over to this friend, take it from my spouse and shift it over to this friend, I have violated my marriage vow. I have done the very thing that I said I would not do, which is leave the network of my loyalties, my father and mother, and cleave to you, my spouse.
So, Jack, what might that look like?
Well, you would see signs of it when I start taking sides in some kind of disagreement or conflict. I start siding with my friend over my spouse. I start empathizing with my friend without empathizing with my spouse. All kinds of emotional signals that I'm really on the side of my friend and I'm against my spouse. Mm-hmm. That would be one obvious set of signs.
I might be on a team, and so to speak, against my spouse.
Right, gang up on my spouse.
We might gossip together about that person and how awful that person is.
Right.
I might spend an inordinate amount of time with that person.
Right, right.
My friend, as opposed to my spouse.
And you can start getting signals from the friend, too, when the nature of the friend's input into my life is not to encourage me to be the wife or husband that I'm supposed to be, but rather to seek to draw me away, to
even undermine the relationship.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Competing for my loyalty, competing for my attention, even demanding that I be loyal to them above my spouse, grasping of my attention. I remember it was probably several years ago now, but I think it was in the Atlantic Monthly, there was an article that came out that at the time kind of shocked our culture. It was on emotional emotional adultery. And a woman described, the author described being at work at an office and getting a phone call, I believe, that her father had died or something. And her first impulse was to call this fellow worker, this man who worked in the office, that she had come to be very emotionally dependent upon. Her first impulse was to call this man. Her first impulse was not to call her husband. And all of a sudden, that jarred her awake, and she realized, my goodness, what's happened? That I am so attached to this other man emotionally that I would run to him for support rather than to my husband for support. And it started her thinking, reevaluating her life, and realizing that she was involved in what she was prepared to call emotional adultery.
So can you define emotional adultery?
Well, I think it's just, at an emotional level, having shifted my loyalty over to some other man other than my husband or some other woman other than my wife, and along with that loyalty will come my my sense of support, emotional support, dependence. Where am I looking for the reward of a relationship? Where do I want the reward of a meaningful relationship to come from? Not from my spouse, but from this other person.
And it seems like in this state of emotional adultery, then my marriage partner in some sense kind of becomes just extra baggage for me. And I think perhaps I might become somewhat more secretive and much more private. I think
right.
that could be another really telltale sign of what's going on, that there is not a first loyalty to my husband.
Yeah, if I can't, that's a real important telltale sign. If I, maybe not even all that consciously, it may only be semi-consciously, but if I find myself not being able to be fully transparent and fully open with my spouse about this other relationship, mm-hmm. then there's something going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I myself sense that this is inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I'm becoming too private about it, and that becomes kind of my little secret off to the side, that's a really big sign that there's a problem going on.
Yeah. I would maybe you can answer this. I would expect that emotional adultery is a very huge problem in the Christian culture, because we are, maybe this is changing, but I know in the past, as a Christian culture, we've been a lot more attuned to what was wrong about physical adultery, and in our desire to be good, responsible Christians, we would avoid physical adultery. But I would imagine that there's a lot of stepping over the lines at this level of emotional adultery. Is that true from your experience?
I would say there really is a lot. I think both males and females. For females, we tend to be more attuned to the emotional side of ourselves. Now, I don't want to use that as an across-the-board statement, because I don't think it's true. I think there's some men that are very emotionally in tune. But women tend to be naturally more that way. And so they'll seek out other women and get their emotional needs met in that way. And it is far easier to do it with a woman, because we just naturally get it with each other. We're not from different planets. We track with each other naturally. And so to have an emotional commitment that's very deep with a woman is something that lots of women have. And I think it's an okay thing, and it's a good thing. But again, to go too far with it, where I'm making that my primary commitment and my primary loyalty rather than my husband, is really wrong. And it takes a lot of work to make the commitment with my husband, especially on an emotional level, particularly if my husband just isn't attuned in that way. He may have to do a lot of learning in that area, but I think I, as the wife, am the primary teacher, or need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And being the primary teacher may just mean I need to be patient about it. And sometimes even, I mean, not a teacher in the sense that I'm directing or I'm making him learn something. I don't mean it in that way. But offering my assistance, offering my opportunities to help him learn something that he's not really familiar with.
Okay, now you're talking primarily about a violation of the relationship in a same-sex friendship. Is that where you see it more often than in an opposite-sex
friendship? Well, I was addressing that right now, but here on my notes it's saying I need to talk about the opposite-sex too.
Mm-hmm.
But let me go back to men-men relationships.
Okay.
It seems to me, and maybe you can help me out here, it seems to me that men connect a lot on things that they do together. And they get involved in sports or some kind of group, some things that they do together.
Mm-hmm.
An emphasis on the do, with women more an emphasis on the talking, feeling level. And they end up spending a lot of times at their hobby, their activity, and the wife stays at home and just takes care of the kids. And so they've got a relationship with their friend that's much more interesting to them, much more of a pull to them than their wife, who maybe doesn't share the same interests.
Mm-hmm. I really don't know if I know But that sounds right to me, just based on a casual observation, that sounds right to me. My life is so consumed with either my work or my family that I don't really have a lot of interaction with other men right now at this point in my life, and so I'm not on the man friendship scene.
You're not on the cutting edge of this one.
I don't watch football, for example, so I just have such a limited experience to draw on. But I think you're absolutely right that I can... You see men, or at least I have a vague glimpse of a culture out there that where men escape their marriages through their various pursuits, and oftentimes they do that together. You know, that in some kind of group of men, group of friends who hunt together, who go to football games together.
Who work together,
yeah. And those friendships can easily, if we're not careful, become much more important than my relationship with my spouse. And that's the same thing all over again, a violation of this commitment that I've made to make my wife the highest loyalty in my life, my highest priority. And it's just wrong not to keep that vow.
I was talking to somebody rather recently, and they were telling me that they didn't even know that this is what was important for them to do. They really thought from their upbringing that men should go off and do things with the other guy. They learned that in their home. And I think we really need to be aware that some people just aren't educated in this way and need to really think very practically about how can I be at home with my spouse? How can I be working toward a relationship of oneness and connectedness with them? How can I make my first loyalty be to them rather than to any other thing that I'm doing? So I would encourage the men that are listening to this and the women to really think about that in a very practical way and to observe their friendships with the opposite, with the same sex or the opposite sex, and think about, am I really more committed to this than I am to my spouse? I think it's easy to do. There are lots of marriages that aren't very good, and I would encourage those people to not give up, but to work on their relationship.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier, Jack, that we also could have a greater loyalty to someone of the opposite sex. And certainly that's true. In fact, I am increasingly grieved by what I see out there. Over the years, I've seen many, many people come to my office who have worked toward a relationship with the opposite sex. Oftentimes, these people are both married. And that's what keeps coming up, at least in my counseling practice, that they'll meet each other on the ski slopes, they'll meet each other on an airplane ride, they'll meet each other at work. But in some way, they'll connect with each other, and they'll have something that's interesting to one another. And it will usually start out rather innocently, so to speak, because they maybe needed to have a business lunch with somebody, or they happened to sit next to each other on the plane. But what occurs over and over again is that people start then kind of milking that relationship a little bit, spending a little bit more time with them, doing a little bit extra, doing another project with them at work, sitting in the car for a long time after a business meeting and talking for a long time. And the more that I hear about this, Jack, I think we really, as married people, need to protect our relationship with our spouse by limiting the time that we spend with the opposite sex, at least concentrated time with one person. We really need to maintain some kind of a distance there. I really think that we can have relationships and friendships with men of the opposite sex. I have one with you as we're sitting here.
Yeah.
And yet, I'm just so grieved by what I see. And people will often say to me, if it hasn't gone into a sexual relationship, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. But I think because of what we've been talking about today, yes, they have, because they've broken their loyalty to their spouse. And usually, this is somewhat secretive. Usually when I say to them, I really think you need to talk to your spouse about this, they will recoil, because the reality is, they're in an adulterous relationship. It's an emotional adulterous relationship, whether or not it becomes physically inappropriate. Though oftentimes there is, you know, a physical relationship that follows, whether it's, you know, a touching of each other's hands or hugging a long time. But usually even those things work themselves into some kind of a very sexual relationship. And it's rather seductive because there's that sense of we're not supposed to be doing this. And it really draws people in. And I've worked with people who have come to me after years of being in these kind of relationships and their spouse doesn't know what's going on. And that they have gotten themselves in the deepest hole. Once more, let's take a break and we'll come right back.
Christine Barber is a licensed marriage and family therapist. More than that, she is a woman committed to knowing and applying the truth of God's Word to everyday life. She has spent years working alongside others as they discover the truth of who they are and then try to pursue life with love and wisdom. Dr. Jack Crabtree is a philosopher by training, a Bible teacher, pastor, and professor by profession. If you spend a short time with Jack, you quickly learn he is a seeker of truth and a man with a deeply passionate love for God's Word. For years, he has studied and taught the Bible at churches in California and Oregon, as well as the McKenzie Study Center in Eugene. Both Jack and Christine are convinced the Bible is the true Word of God. Now let's return to Jack and Christine as they continue the discussion on the breaking of marriage vows.
Before the break, Jack, we were talking about being in emotionally adulterous relationships. And I think that we, as married people, need to be very careful about this, as I said earlier. Because we're married doesn't mean that we have a natural boundary. We have to make the boundary against being attracted to and delving into relationships with somebody of the opposite sex in an inappropriate way. I remember years ago, my husband and I had a couple who was a friend, and the male seemed to have an interest in me, and how you just feel that different feel, just different vibrations. And I remember being flattered by that, and I think any woman or man is flattered by attention from the opposite sex, and immediately telling Larry, my husband, about it, and us talking about what we could do about that. We wanted the relationship with that family. We liked them, but we had to make some adjustments in terms of him being around me alone. And after a while, because we made such clear boundaries, I think that person ended up relating to me in a very appropriate way. But I'm thinking about that as a time when I could have had the opportunity to go down that road. I could have nurtured it. I could have milked it some. And it felt really good to me. Now, as a married person, I really try and take on the posture of being very married. And I think there's a really different attitude about being kind of open to flirtation, open to something else, and being very solid in, I have a relationship with my husband, and that's the only way it can be. And I think we really need to work at that, because, again, it's very flattering when someone comes up to us and is obviously attracted to us in some way.
Yeah, I think saying no to flirtation is a huge thing that we have to come to terms with. It's really never appropriate. It's not appropriate in relationships before marriage, and it's certainly not appropriate in marriage. But I think culture-wide, our attitude toward flirtation is that it's harmless, is that it's just this thing that men and women do in relationship to one another. And I think what you're suggesting is that certainly as married people, and we could talk another time about before marriage, but certainly as married people, we just need to stop ourselves right up front and realize flirting is not appropriate. I'm sending signals that are completely contrary to everything I'm committed to everything that I believe in, to everything that I want, and I just have to stop myself and neither let myself respond to the flirtatious advances of somebody else, nor flirt myself.
And, Jack, if we see ourselves doing that, we need to drop back and say, what is my commitment here?
Exactly. Yeah.
And work on that commitment in a very, very basic way. God gave me this person, I'm married to this person, this is the way it is, and I need to be committed in that way.
Yeah.
You know, I think a way to flirt, which maybe we wouldn't necessarily call this flirting, but let me try this on. I think at the time when our friend was responding to me in an interested way, I think at that point I could have said something to him. We could have had a private conversation that said something like, you know, I think that you're interested in me, and you know, it feels pretty good that you're interested in me, but I think we need to not do this. Well, on one hand, I think that could be really innocent, and in some situations, perhaps that could be okay, but I have a hard time thinking that it is. Because I think what that does is it opens up a door that says something new, something more is between us. And it's a very intimate exchange. And in a way, I think it's flirting in the sense that it's drawing them into me. I think that that exchange needs to happen between my husband and I. This happened with our friend, and this, I'm feeling these things from him. Help me work on this. So that I'm opening a new door with my spouse, or deepening the door with my spouse, rather than opening up a new one with the other person.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's really right. We have built into us ways of sending the signals to the person flirting with me, and that is, don't be responsive to it. And as long as I just simply keep my resolve and keep that kind of reserve, I think you called it being very married.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's very good. I mean, as long as I just send out those signals that, look, I'm married and I'm not available and I'm not interested, it'll go away. You know, the other person will take the hint eventually and take the hint in a way that doesn't ever even give any validity to the interest to start with, which is what having that private conversation does, is it gives some validity to it, mm-hmm. that it doesn't deserve, and it's important to not do that.
And I think lots of times we do that with the excuse of, I'm really trying to walk away from it. No, I don't think that's true at all. I think we're walking right straight into the face of it,
yeah,
under
those
circumstances.
Right. That's good.
Okay, Jack, what if somebody, and I'm not going to say what if, there are people listening today that are saying, well, you know, this is all fine and good that you're saying I shouldn't have a deeper relationship with a friend, either of the opposite sex or the same sex. But the fact is, my husband or my wife is totally uninterested in me. What would you say to those people?
Okay. Well, of course, we need to be clear. We're not saying you can't have a deep relationship with another person. You can have a very deep relationship, a very profoundly supportive, meaningful relationship with a person of the same sex or a person of the opposite sex. But where it crosses the bound is that it's not a friendship, it's a quasi-marriage. It's kind of a replacement marriage for the marriage that isn't going so well for me.
Thank you.
And
for
we have to make that distinction.
Well, thank you for making that distinction again, because I really don't want to communicate that we
right.
can't have good, very good relationships with other people beyond our spouse, and again, I see that as very important. But another way to say it is our highest human loyalty needs to be
right, exactly.
to our spouse.
Yeah.
So
given that, what if my spouse is not reciprocating, is not really being that spouse to me? Yeah. That's one of the tragedies of life, is that we find ourselves in a position where in order to be a person of integrity, a godly person who is living my life under the dictates of what's righteous and what's good, to do that, I may not have what I might otherwise have had. Life circumstances are not giving me some of what I need, some of what I desire, some of what I could have in another situation. And what do I do with that? I simply accept from the hand of God that I'm suffering. I'm being deprived. I'm going without. I'm not having my needs met. It's never right to look into a situation where my needs are not being met by saying, well, if these circumstances don't provide it, then I'm just going to go find my need. I'm going to go get my needs met some other way. And forget goodness, forget obedience, forget righteousness because it's not working for me. That is a foolish person who would do that. that is at the heart of what human evil is all about, is that we would rebel against the God who has ordained my circumstances to such an extent that I'd say, I'm not going to obey you any longer, because in obeying you, I'm not getting what I want. It's far more important that we save our soul and lose our marriage than lose this reward that comes from a marital relationship, than it is that we find some quasi-illicit marriage with somebody and lose my soul. That the stakes are really high, and we have to decide what we want in life. Do we or do we not want to be people who are godly and righteous and obedient to God, and who are living out our lives in the light of His truth? If so, then it might mean sometimes that my marriage just is not what God intended marriage to be, and doesn't provide the reward that God intended for me to get from marriage. But so be it. That's the life, the hand that God has dealt me.
So I'll play the person who is having this very difficult marriage relationship for a moment and come back to you and say, you mean God just wants me to suffer? I can't imagine that.
Well, you look at the book of Job. Job suffered immensely in his life. That's what's portrayed in that book. And he's crying out to God, God, explain this to me. I don't deserve what's happening to me. Why are you doing this to me? I need an explanation. And by the end of the book, I think Job has come to see, God has shown him, that God doesn't owe him an explanation. God is a wise God who knows what He's doing. And God's primary concern in my life is to mold me and shape me into the wise person who will be ready and qualified to enter into the kingdom of God. He knows what that takes. I don't. I am in no position to be God's counselor and advisor and tell Him how He should run my life. He knows much better than I do.
So what God might know is that He's putting me in a training ground in my marriage that's not good.
Precisely.
To lead me to become the kind of person that He wants me to be.
Exactly.
And He doesn't promise that marriages will be good, that life will be good, that I'm going to have the color of hair I want, or the money I want, or anything that I necessarily want. What God's promising is that He's going to make me into a person that's headed toward righteousness.
Yeah. That's a basic underlying theme of the Bible that we just have to come to terms with. We've got it so wrong in our culture today, in our Christian culture today. We tend to think that the reason to come to Jesus is because Jesus is going to fix my life. He's going to make my life better. He's going to make my marriage better. He's going to make my relationship with my children better. He's going to make my relationship with my the people I work with better. He's going to make my sex life better. He's going to make life happier all the way around in every way. And that's why we come to Jesus, and everybody should come to Jesus so their life will go better. That couldn't be further from the truth. That couldn't be further from the message of the Bible. The message of the Bible is that the reason we come to Jesus is because the gospel makes a promise about my ultimate human existence, about eternal existence, about the ultimate end of what my life is all about. And that ultimate end that God has promised me is so important and so valuable and so significant and so worthwhile that no happiness that I could have in this lifetime can hold a candle to the glory, the shining glory of the happiness and the reward and the fulfillment that's going to come from being a member of the kingdom of God. That's the biblical perspective. And the Bible goes on to say then, therefore, you have to do without some things in this life. You have to suffer a little bit. There's some anguish. There's some pain in this life. Okay, but it's not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us one day. The reward and fulfillment that's ultimately going to be mine as a child of God is so important that I need to be and I should be prepared to give up any happiness that this life has to offer me.
And sometimes you're saying maybe I have to give up a little bit of this or a little bit of that. Sometimes it is just a little bit of this.
Sometimes it's a lot.
Sometimes it's profoundly huge. It's so big that people can hardly stand up.
Yeah.
And I think that's true in marriage often. I can have a marriage that's so disappointing, so difficult for me, that it's hard for me to face the day after day. Now, we're not talking about people staying in marriage when they're being abused in some way. There's just nothing noble or nothing good about being absolutely cremated in a marriage.
Right.
And we're not going into that right now. But sometimes when my marriage just isn't fulfilling me in the way that I want it to, I just have to say, that's the way it is. Because God is teaching me something bigger and something better through that. And that's what you're saying.
And everybody's marriage is to some extent not going to be fulfilling, because life is not fulfilling. The biblical perspective on life is that it's futility. This existence we live in now is empty compared to what my heart longs for and craves. There's nothing in this life that is anything other than emptiness, even marriage. Marriage can be rewarding, it can be rich. Like I said at the beginning of the program, it's the greatest gift God has given me, is my marriage. And there's a lot of emotional rewards that come from that. But it's not enough to sustain my existence. My heart longs for more. It longs for, ultimately, the kingdom of God.
It's not as though you're saying we should just, though, accept suffering in a passive way. But we can actively work towards a good marriage.
Yeah, I can do my part. I can do what God has called me to do. I can strive to connect with my wife or husband who's not seeming to be responsive to that. I can strive to make them the highest loyalty in my life, and so on. But the thing that's so difficult about, one of the things that's so difficult about marriage is that's another human being on the other end of that relationship. And they have a will of their own. They have freedom to do good or to do evil, to keep their vows or to break their vows. And I really can't responsibly and righteously control them.
I can't demand that they be right, that they do what's good.
Exactly. And we talked about last week that one of the mistakes I can make is to try to override their will and manipulate them, control them. But that's not keeping my vow. Now I'm no longer respecting them as an individual in their own right. And that's the catch-22 that we're in. We need something from them, but they have to give it. I can't manipulate it out of them. If I do, I'm not being loving to them. And secondly, they're not going to be giving me what I really want anyway if I manipulate it out of them. So I can only go so far in terms of making my marriage rewarding. I can go to the nth degree to keep my vows and do my part, but I can't make their decisions for them.
I like that emphasis a whole lot. I think so many times when our marriages aren't going well, what we do is end up trying to demand the other person to give us what we want. And that's always wrong, and it's always destructive. On the other hand, I think that we need to really, as you said, look into going the nth degree ourselves. You know, a lot of people that I see in counseling come saying they've done this and this and this and this, and they really feel like they've gone to the nth degree. And just from a very quick glance, I can see that although they have tried to many times, they have had the intent to do so. They have been blind in their wrong course. They're going hard in the wrong direction. So because of our blindness, I think we need a lot of help to see what we're doing and how we're doing it, and maybe how we're contributing to what's going on in the relationship. And I keep saying this over and over again, but that I need to look at my own contribution. I think in every show I probably say that. But I'm sure I'll keep saying that, because I think that our first tendency is to blame the other person rather than look at our own responsibility. And it's easy to miss our own responsibility even when we're trying. So I think we need people who are wise and giving us some good input. And going back to friendships, I think if we truly have a good friendship who is helping us, person who's helping us tend to our first loyalty of our spouse, they can give us insight. They will no longer be giving us insight if they want to be our first loyalty.
Yeah, exactly. And if they're truly my friend, they will be telling me the truth about myself. They won't let me get away with my rationalization and my scapegoating, my blaming my husband or wife. They'll point me into my contribution.
And I would say then that maybe one of the qualities of good friendship is that I sometimes feel very uncomfortable because I'm hearing the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really very difficult to hear the truth.
Yeah.
I would like friends, good friends, to put me out of business as a counselor. It will never happen.
Yeah.
Because I'm one that people come to and I tell them the truth.
it's interesting that you would say that. That I've wondered the same thing. You know, what happened in society before there were counselors, before there even was an occupation, a vocation of counselor. And I think friendship, to whatever extent it did happen at all, it probably happened out of those good friendships that people had. If I could come back for a second, you were talking earlier about going to the nth degree, but not really going to the nth degree and keeping my vows. I think it's important to realize that what we're called upon to do is to keep our vows, not manipulate the other person through obedience and goodness. It seems really subtle, but I think it's a crucial difference. If I am kind and serving and compliant and cooperative and so on in the relationship, in order to try to make the other person beholden to me and put them in a position where now they need to be kind to me in the way that I want them to be kind to me, I'm not just being good. I'm not just being righteous. I'm not just being faithful to my vows and faithful to my God. It's a very subtle but real form of manipulation and control. And that kind of goodness is kind of tainted. And I think ultimately the other person, the partner, senses how compromised my goodness is and don't respond to it in the same way. I really ultimately need to be able to take the attitude that I need to do right by my marriage partner because I need to do right by my marriage partner. That's my obligation. That's my duty. That's my responsibility. That's my joy that I take on. I want before my God to be the kind of person who's doing right by my marriage partner. If I do that, if the other person is going to respond at all, and maybe they won't, but if they're going to respond at all, they're going to respond very differently to that than they will the kind of carefully doled out service and love and goodness that I use as a kind of technique of manipulation.
And you know, I really, really agree with you that is that kind of compliance that's with the intent of getting you to perform for me in some way. It's not goodness. It's just manipulation in a quiet way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're often, as we said last week, really patted on the back for that. So I think someone listening can say, well, how do I know if I'm doing that or not? I might not be slowly doling out goodness. I might be abundant in my givingness, my so-called givingness. And I think the telltale sign, Jack, is am I self-righteous?
Yeah, or resentful, or both.
Both. I think the two go together.
Yeah.
Self-righteous, I mean, do I feel like I'm better than the other person?
Right, right.
Somehow I'm higher. Somehow I'm more spiritual. I'm gooder in some way. And if I find that in myself, I need to look at that and say, that is ugly stuff oozing out of me. And I'm not doing these things out of goodness or righteousness. I'm doing them for an entirely different motive.
Yeah.
And like you said, also resentment or a deep seed of bitterness, which could come out in angry responses that are somewhat covert, in a passive-aggressive way, sideways stabbing at my spouse. I might just become very irritable about what seems to be silly things, but there's this sense in me that people would have about me that's just something isn't right, something isn't okay. Actually, I'm going to correct that. Usually I won't let other people know this is going on. My spouse will only have this sense that something's wrong, and I might be sweeter than frosting to other people, and they could never imagine anything but me being all goodness and light.
Hmm.
And you know, the Bible says that we're not all goodness and light. We're sinners.
Yeah.
And it's going to be coming out in our marriages, and we need to look at how it's coming out, not if it is, and work toward becoming a spouse that's much more loving than we can be if we sit back and say, hey, I'm just a good guy.
Yeah.
Don't go away. Jack and Christine will continue the discussion in just a moment. You've heard it said that a college degree is not what it used to be. It seems these days colleges and universities are charging more and offering less. That's one of the reasons why Gutenberg College was developed. While many universities brag about their massive size and huge student body, Gutenberg College thrives on the idea that big is not always better. A student should not become a meaningless cog in some big education machine. A student should have the chance to interact in a meaningful way with his or her peers and professors. At Gutenberg, classes are small. Interaction with other students and with faculty is high. And education becomes interesting as well as rewarding. Imagine having a deep discussion about Aristotle or Shakespeare, where your ideas are sincerely considered. Imagine struggling to understand the writings of Augustine and having a faculty tutor come alongside you to help. And you'll get a good idea of why Gutenberg exists. And yet, there are many other advantages to Gutenberg other than its size. If you want to know more about Gutenberg College and all that it offers, call 541-485-4801. That's area code 541-485-4801. Now, if you didn't have time to write that down, stay tuned. We'll repeat it again at the end of the program. Here again are Jack and Christine.
Well, Jack, today when we started out, we were pretty optimistic about what we were going to cover in the last hour. We had quite an outline, and we just got to the first point on the first part of the outline. But what we talked about today was making our marriage partner our highest human loyalty. And that's something that I think is not common in our culture. Very often we can, in very subtle but big ways, end up having our loyalty be towards something else. It could be toward my work, toward my hobby, my interests. It could be, and I think often is, toward other friendships. And friendships, though, we said, are very good and helpful and supportive in a relationship. What we need to be doing is looking at our spouse as a person we're most loyal to, over and above anything else.
You said something, Christine, in the last hour that really struck me, and I've been thinking about it. I think it's really true that men in particular oftentimes will go into their marriage and conduct themselves in their marriage based on patterns that they've seen in our culture rather than based on the truth about what marriage is and the relationship is supposed to be all about as God created it and as God intended it. And I think if there's anything that's critical for us to come to terms with as Christians, is that we recognize my culture gets some things wrong. And so as I look out there at the patterns of men spending weekend after weekend in recreation or, you know, together as friends doing one activity or another, just because that may be a cultural pattern doesn't make it right. And I always need to allow the Bible to stand in judgment over our culture and over our cultural patterns, and I have to decide, am I going to just fit in with everything else the guys are doing in my culture, or am I going to do this thing differently because the Bible requires it, because my God requires it? And I think the bottom line of what we're saying here today is the Bible does require something very different from what we see going on around us.
You have been listening to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. Next week, Jack and Christine continue the discussion on keeping and breaking marriage vows. If you would like a free copy of this program, or would like to know more about Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College, you may call us at area code 541-485-4801. You can write to us at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And we're also on the Internet. Look for us under Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College. If you didn't have time to write all that down, I'll repeat it again in just a moment. The Mackenzie staff has worked for years studying the Bible, understanding the world we live in, and pursuing what it means to be a Christian. They desire that their ministry may be valuable to others, but they also know that their efforts are in deep need of God's mercy. You can join the Mackenzie staff through classes, seminars, tapes, and papers. The Mackenzie Study Center is a nonprofit ministry entirely funded by the generous contributions of people who believe in its goals and have benefited from its ministry. If you would like to make a gift to Mackenzie, it will be entirely tax deductible. Just mail your check to Mackenzie Study Center, 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. If you would like to call and request a free taped copy of today's program, The telephone number is 541-485-4801. Now on behalf of Dr. Jack Crabtree, Christine Barber, and the other staff of McKenzie Study Center, thank you for listening.